Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's a Saturday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. on the Central side, and we are here every Saturday with a great friend of ours. This is actually his radio show. It's Scott Johnson. And for those people that are new, we have new people all the time. For those people that are new, Scott Johnson and I started this radio show. It's coming. We're coming up to our anniversary pretty soon. I remember it was in August that we started to do this radio show. I guess the year was 2015. I'm really not good with dates, but I think it's been a long time. And this is one of our longest running radio shows. And the way this whole thing got started was I built Building Fortunes Radio because we wanted a platform where we could talk about different and various things related to home-based businesses. And my management style, let's talk about that just for a second, is I always wanted to, if people are interested in doing something, I always wanted to show them, you know, the way it works. You know, show them not just the academic way it works, you know, the way it works on paper, but you have to show them the way it works out on the street. And I grew up in New York, and there was different and various things that I learned running a business in New York that you might not necessarily have to do with running a business anywhere else. And one thing led to another is I always learned that whatever the academics are talking about, you know, the people that are the reporters or writing the newsletters or the newspaper articles or whatever talking about it, had no clue. I mean, really, they had no clue. They thought they were smart. They read a book or read a study, and maybe they did whatever, and they had no clue. So when I was in the network marketing industry and became on top, if you will, of some of the trade associations like the Distributor Rights Association, I was asked to be the president. That eventually turned into the ANMP. I was always somewhat frustrated by people that were being deceived by not knowing some of the truth behind the MLM industry. For instance, and specifically, you know, just because you saw somebody up on stage making $100,000 a month, you know, after whatever, a couple of months or a couple of years in the industry, doesn't mean that you could do that too. So I felt that there was a certain level of, it wasn't necessarily deception. It was not telling people, you know, the truth. So that's why we started Building Fortunes Radio, because I got tired of people not wanting to tell the truth, you know. So Scott and I, sometimes we say, you know, when MLM is done right, you know, it's really good. When MLM is done wrong, it's really bad. So we're pro-MLM when done right and anti-MLM when done wrong. So we started to do some radio shows. I ran across a gentleman named Roger Van Vlissingen, and Roger's name is spelled R-O-G-I-E-R. And Roger Van Vlissingen, by coincidence, pocket-dialed me. Scott, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but Roger Van Vlissingen accidentally pocket-dialed me this week or just towards the tail end of last week, so which prompted me to call him back because I didn't realize I was just a pocket dial. And we had a really nice conversation. He may be coming back on this, talking about totally different things. But at the time, Roger was running writing some articles with SeekingAlpha.com as an opinion guy, talking about some of the things that were happening with Herbalife, a publicly traded company. And Vima had just happened, so he was kind of throwing some Vima stuff in there as well. And Roger was very much anti-MLM. When I called him up, we did a radio show. I'm kind of cutting this short a little bit. But we did a radio show, and then that's how I met Scott Johnson. Scott took the initiative to pick up the phone and call, which I liked, because instead of, you know, writing an email or maybe writing an article about a conference call that he heard, he picked up the phone. And we had a nice conversation. I remember it was a Labor Day, whatever that Monday holiday might be, in that August month. So we had this conversation. He called me up that Monday, and we said, well, let's do a couple of radio shows, and we did. And as a result of that, we've been doing these radio shows ever since. Now, what I didn't talk about just yet during my introduction is the topic that we spoke about was the tool scam that Scott Johnson was bringing up, because he said, you know, there's a lot of things that people are missing. I said, what's that, Scott? He said, the tool scam associated with MLM. And I'll let Scott talk about that. So he usually brings that up, and we'll start our radio show talking about whatever we're going to talk about next. But sometimes we do the radio show ourselves. Sometimes we have guests, and sometimes we have really, direct conversations about MLM, sometimes we're a little bit on the abstract side where you need a little bit of a complex brain to be able to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together. But all of the radio shows that we do are very important for you, I think, to learn some of the things that happen in the MLM and the business world. So, Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me. It was Labor Day 2015. You're exactly right. I think I may have called you on Labor Day. And you weren't busy, with your business, because most people do take Labor Day off. So it was a very nice conversation for sure. And we did talk about the Amway tool scam. And some other MLMs have tool scams, others don't. So it's not universal. I'm not one of these anti-MLM huns that paints every MLM with a broad brush and say, yeah, they're all identical, they all do exactly the same things and that sort of thing. And the problem with doing that, of course, is once you're proven wrong on some issue, then you lose credibility. And when you lose credibility, you really lose the right for people to listen to you. And that's why I'm very careful about how I state things and make claims. I want to make sure I have the documentation to back it up. And by the way, from a documentation standpoint, if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see three websites. You'll see the YouTube channel that I have. You'll see the link to this radio show, all approximately 400 of them over the past 8 years on a weekly basis, and my email. So it's all there. It's all documented. Things like making multiple times more from the tools versus Amway, it's all documented. And it's not my calculations or my guesses or anything like that. It's people that used to be making that money who got kicked out of Amway, and they just started talking. They weren't really trying to say anything in particular about the tool scam. They were usually bragging about how much better the new MLM that they joined is from a bonus point of view, and therefore they didn't have to, and these are my words, they didn't have to scam their downline with a tool scam. But they do talk about how much they made in Amway with the tools versus from the Amway business. So that's all on those websites. You can find those statements from the horse's mouth, as they say. So, what is the tool scam? That's always an important question. And what it is, particularly with Amway, is it's the various meetings, it's the books, it's the recordings, it's the phone apps, it's the websites, it's the voicemail. There's also, I learned recently, a text mail format. In other words, instead of getting on a voicemail and, telling your story of the day, like a lot of organizations do with their people, tell me what you did today type thing, they can text it, which probably it does appeal to the younger generation because they don't like to talk on the phone in general. There's always exceptions, but they're the texting generation. So there's a text platform now where they can report in and talk about different things. So, and I don't have a problem with people making money. Okay. That's not the issue here. The issue is they don't talk about that most of their income came from the tools while they're in. It's only after they get kicked out and they just start, flapping their gums. And so that's the problem. That's why it's a scam, is that most people who have never been in Amway or are currently in Amway, or even people that used to be in Amway, have no idea that the upline, the top 1% essentially, make a lot of money from tools. And I'm talking multiple times, not just two or three times more, but 8 to 10 or more times more from the tools as opposed to Amway. And that's why it's a scam, is because they're just lying by omission where they're making most of their money from. And people mostly don't understand that. They have never heard it. Now, the internet has helped over the past several years, but we're not there yet. You know, the peak of Amway was 2013, a decade ago. And if you account for inflation, they're now just over 50% of what they were a decade ago. So they're definitely shrinking. But until they get shrunk enough to where it's insignificant and people are not being scammed by the tools, then, you know, to me, my work is not done. So that's what we're talking about with the tool scam. Now, the other problem, which I believe is almost universal within MLM, I do think there's some insurance companies and there might be others. You know, I don't, I wouldn't say that there's no other or there's no companies other than some of the insurance MLMs that have significant retail sales. But I think most of them do not. Simply because if you look at the prices of most MLMs, they're expensive. They're overpriced when you look for a comparable product on the market. And we're talking two or three times or more. So we're not talking, you know, 20, 30% more where you could say, yeah, it's got these special ingredients and so forth. It's really multiple times more. And you have to account for that increased price coming from a number of different factors. You know, one of them is the fact that they're much smaller businesses than some of the other larger corporations, you know, the non-MLM companies that they compete with. And so everything from the raw materials to the efficiency of using their manufacturing facilities, to their overhead, just all kinds of reasons why it costs more to make something, and that's really applied to any small company versus a large company, and it definitely applies to MLMs. Another thing is they have to set money aside in the price to account for the bonus, and so they have to jack up the price just to cover the bonus, because you're not going to find distributors working with an MLM if they're not getting paid. So, and you have to keep up with the Joneses, right? You have to keep up with other MLMs in order to compete for those distributors. You know, once word gets around that your bonus plan is not very good, then people are going to start looking around. Now they do anyway, but, you know, you don't want to accelerate that. So, so that's the other big problem with, I would say, most MLMs, just because they're overpriced and they just can't sell products to customers. You know, customers being people who are not MLMs, people who are not part of the MLM compensation plan. That's what a customer is. Distributors are not customers. Distributors are internal consumption. They're not considered customers in my frame of reference. And so it's very difficult to sell the products because of that. And that is actually the definition of an illegal pyramid. And a lot of people don't understand that either. That's a big problem. If you look at all the anti-MLM huns, you know, they're saying pyramid, 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 but they have no idea how to define it. And I think most of them define it in their own heads as the multiple levels. They think that's a pyramid because when you draw out an organization of an MLM, it kind of looks like a pyramid. Well, guess what? Most organizations look like a pyramid. And so what's the difference? The difference is in a non-MLM company, let's say, that has a pyramidal organizational shape, you know, the org chart, so to speak, they sell most of their products and or services to people who are not part of the company, whereas an MLM is the exact opposite. They sell most of their products, the MLM does, the MLM company, to their distributors. And so there's very little to no outside sales from most distributors, and that percentage of overall ratio of distributors to customers is very high. You know, in other words, multiple times more is being purchased by the distributors, which is never sold to a customer. It either is consumed, it goes in the inventory, gets thrown away after it expires, those kinds of things, compared to the customer sales. And so that's the definition of an illegal pyramid. It has nothing to do with the multiple levels. Now, the multiple levels do make it harder to have customers because of the overpriced products, right? If you have overpriced products, it's hard to sell. And I think that's what happened to AdvoCare. You know, we don't know exactly what happened with AdvoCare in 2019 because they settled with the FTC, and there's just not a lot of detailed information available. But the FTC did accuse them of being an illegal pyramid, and they changed from an MLM model to a direct selling model. And again, people get those terms confused thinking that they're the same thing, and they're not. And a lot of it is because of the MLMs themselves and even the organizations that represent MLMs, like the Direct Selling Association. They weave the words MLM and direct sales together to cause a lot of people to believe they're the same thing, and they're not. Because a direct selling company is where you as an individual are not connected to an upline. You don't have a downline. Each individual is connected directly to the company, and their profit results from retail sales to customers, period. That's how you make money in a direct selling company, like you did with your Electrolux vacuum cleaner company years ago. That's direct selling. Now, I know that you also, or the company, developed an MLM model along with that. However, you were still selling most of your vacuums to customers, not to other distributors. And so that's something that I don't know why it's so hard for people to get that. Maybe it's because I've been thinking about it for so long and have thought through all the processes and all the different combinations and permutations. And to me, it's a very simple concept. Maybe it's complicated. It's hard to know why people don't understand that and don't want to listen to somebody who has the answer. As I told Professor Bill Keep, that I have the answer key, and he didn't think too much of that, so there you go. But anyway, that's the two big problems, right? The lack of retail sales, which is an illegal pyramid, and tool scams, which I believe is RICO fraud, or at least business fraud, because if you don't describe the business model in its entirety, and we're not talking about a detail here, right? We're talking about multiple times more from the tools compared to the Amway profit. And by the way, only the top 1% get paid in Amway for the tool profit. In fact, Amway is on record. That's one of my stories on my YouTube channel. A guy by the name of Andy Andrews, and I can't prove this, but I do believe he pulled a letter out of his jacket pocket during a major function, and he said that this letter came from Amway, and Amway stated that only the 1 to 2% top distributors can make money from the tools, and the other 98% should not even be aware that there's an opportunity. So Amway's all in as far as, you know, protecting these tool scammers. They are not an innocent bystander. They are a participant. And they do that, of course, because they don't want to lose their big, tool scammers, because they'll take all their downline with them to a different MLM, and then Amway is without a business, essentially, or not enough volume to support a business, and therefore they would go out of business. So they have to coddle these people and you know, set the rules to keep them in business, you know, both the tool scammers and the Amway. So it is a partnership at the top, for sure, whereas the 99%+ of IBOs, Amway calls them now, independent business owners, they basically get screwed two ways. They're paying for overpriced Amway products that they're not selling to customers, which is an illegal pyramid, and then they're turning around and getting scammed on the tools. And so it's a two-for-one. There's a win-win-lose, right? The company wins, the upline wins, and the 99% of the IBOs lose. So it's a terrible situation that it needs to be addressed by the FTC. I'm hoping that they're going to be doing that pretty soon, because they have reached out to update their business opportunity rule. They took input for product and income claims comments last year. But this thing takes time. It's not a overnight process. So hopefully within the next, let's say, 2 or 3 years, there's going to be some more movement from the FTC generically within the MLM industry, because currently all they're doing is going after one or two companies every year or two. And when you have, you know, 600, 700, 800 MLMs in the United States alone, then there's just not much getting done. And they need to come up with generic rules. So I'll stop there and let you make any comments, and then we can move ahead with whatever we want to talk about this week.
Yep, all good stuff. And part of the challenge with the regulation, if you will, of the MLM industry is partly because of lobbyists. So MLM companies know how to buy people, and some of it is incompetence, and some of it is power struggle, and some of it is who is running the FTC at this time. And because of all that sort of stuff, a lot of people are hurt because the bad players are allowed to be bad players, and there's not the regulations that we need, or some overzealous, if you will, FTC commissioner or chairperson just decides that she's going to go after this or that or somebody else or isn't even paying attention. And because of all that level of incompetence or power struggles, that's why the industry really gets a chance to flounder on its own, hurting a lot of distributors as well. So having said that, I'll let you comment on that, Scott, and then I'll jump into one thing I want to mention first, and then we can jump into other stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, in a very real way, they're damaging their own reputation by not fixing things. You know, the MLM industry itself, you know, by floundering around, like you say, because social media is now alive and well. There's a lot of anti-MLMers out there that, even though they're misguided, most of them are not hitting the right points. They're still causing sort of a negative connotation towards MLM, and it is having an impact. You know, I do believe that one of the main reasons Amway is almost down to 50% of what they were in 2013 is the social media and just word getting around and people being able to find things easily now on the internet. You know, back in the early days of the internet, there wasn't a whole lot of information on there because everything that's on the internet had to be put there, right? It didn't just show up. It had to be put there by somebody. And a lot of it was just because of the lack of bandwidth. You know, in the early days, we had those little dial-up modems. You could hear the little, you know, music playing in the background when your modem was connecting. But then you couldn't do anything like play a video. Even an audio was really not possible. It was really just text. And, you know, you can't get a lot of information put across quickly when you're doing text only, and you really don't know the source of it, so you don't know whether to believe it or not. So, you know, when you have actual videos of people saying actual things, when you can actually read legal documents, you know, that are not just text, they're actually a, you know, a legal document where, you know, it's like a PDF where it's got a lot more bandwidth required in order to download it. If you want to download it in less than a couple hours, you know, like in the old days. So it's really been enabled by technology. And certainly social media has really ramped it up as well. So, yeah, I guess that's my two cents. I'll let you continue.
There you go. So, yeah, so I was just thinking about this. You know, sometimes when I listen to someone talking about a topic, sometimes I don't use specifics, so I'll use some specifics. And a couple of years ago, I think it was a couple of years ago, maybe it was just last year, the FTC lost in the Supreme Court the 13B regulations, where they had their quote-unquote power to be able to basically bully and compensate and hurt a company on their own. So I'll be specific. They could literally go to a judge with some lawyers and probably say to the judge, you know, this Vima company, they're really bad, and they're doing things illegally, and we need to do a temporary restraining order. And the judge says, okay, well, you're the only guys here in this room. They call that ex parte, meaning the other side doesn't know this is going on. But since you're the FTC, we're going to trust what you're saying. Go ahead. What do you want to do? You want to freeze their assets? You know? So go ahead. And then, obviously, when they do that, a company like Vima would be hurt. Or whether they want to do it with Success by Health. Yeah, you want to do it? Well, recently, the government said, not the government, the Supreme Court said, you've been doing it this way for so long, Supreme Court. This is illegal. Like, this is unconstitutional. You can't do this anymore. So just like a scorned woman, I know that probably raises some eyebrows somewhere, or a scorned lover, they decided that they're going to get back. And what they're going to do is they're going to say, really, we can't do that anymore? Well, what are we going to do if we want to be that government overreach, power-hungry kind of a thing to be able to regulate and protect customers? I think they think they're protecting customers because everybody that does an MLM is obviously very bad in at least the new regulators' minds. So what they said was, well, what we'll just do, okay, if that's the way you want, the government says, listen, you can't do it without warning customers or companies in advance. So what did they do? They went out and they sent warning letters to, I don't know, 1,100 companies that, you know, you have income claims or lifestyle claims. And if you continue to do this, we can fine you $47,000 per violation. And you have medical claims, so we can do the same thing. We'll just charge you $47,000. And what they did in a blanket form was they sent like over 1,000 companies letters to say, you're on notice, and you better stop doing this. Otherwise, we have now the right, we've warned you, now we have the right to go out there and really go after you. So what they basically did, the FTC basically, as I'm bringing it down to your house. So imagine I'm talking about you. The FTC basically went into your house, was moving around a little bit, left a note on your door or your kitchen table and said, we were here, we're looking around, and you're doing things or some of your kids or distributors are doing things wrong, and anytime we want to, we can just kind of swoop down now because we left this note inside your kitchen table and put a gold star on your refrigerator with this little FTC warning on it. So now, there, you know, Supreme Court, now there you go. Now instead of just putting a couple of companies on notice, we'll put the whole industry on, like shock therapy. That's basically what they did. You know, ha, 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 the academics that they are. You know, no ramifications or repercussions to their ridiculous actions. And unfortunately, that's had an impact on some companies. Some companies just don't care. But on some companies, it really did. Now they're kind of like freaking out, tightening the screws, maybe doing some of it the right way and the wrong way. But that's basically what the FTC did as a result of getting their asses kicked in the Supreme Court 9-0. This is their, you know, reflex reaction that went totally the wrong way. And now what, this is what they're doing to other companies right now, sending out these letters. So they did it, and TINA.org helped out as far as some of the highlighting of those things, and other organizations as well have basically showcased that too. And there's been some real ramifications based on that. And I think, Scott, Dave Vaughn sent us the link to the DSN meeting. I haven't watched it yet, which this radio show is reminding me that I'm supposed to watch that. But I think he actually sent us a link to a meeting that they had where the industry was talking about the ramifications of the FTC now doing some of the things that they're doing. So I'll let you comment on that, and then we'll get to some of the other things I wanted to talk about. But these are kind of important stuff. So if you wonder why your MLM company is freaking out a little bit, these are some of the reasons why. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I haven't read that or seen that link either. I meant to watch it, and I will, because that was an important thing. Now, that is in their toolbox, in the FTC's toolbox. They do have the authority to, you know, make that threat, so to speak. Now, what's interesting is that for several years, particularly TINA.org, because TINA.org is, you know, very out front with all of the things that they're doing, you know, as far as writing letters to MLMs, and then if they don't respond, they send them to the FTC, and it's very well documented and all of that. And there's also a company, but it's at least an organization. I think it's called the DSSRC, and it's basically a company that is involved in both the DSA and the Better Business Bureau, and they have a charter to find, you know, the worst actors and submit, again, letters to the companies, and if they don't respond, then to submit some input to the FTC. Well, to the best of my knowledge, the FTC has never actually acted on any of these, whether it's the DSSRC, whether it's TINA.org. And so, you know, my view is that the FTC is mostly bark with very little bite. So and maybe there's some behind the scenes messaging going on between the FTC and these companies, and that's why they're, you know, taking more action. I don't know. Although I would view that as irresponsible, because the FTC is designed to protect consumers, not warn companies that, hey, this is coming. So I know that, you know, that threat of the $47,000 fine, and by the way, that's per event, right? So if you have 10 different people,
yeah.
10 different people doing the same thing, you know, whether it be a product claim or an income claim that's inappropriate, then that's 10 times, that's almost $500,000 or up to, right? I think the way the law is written is it's up to $47,000. So I don't think the FTC would go for the maximum on the first violation. I think they would start out, you know, relatively low and send the message out, and hopefully other companies would pay attention. And if they don't, then they can start ramping up the penalties. But right now, you know, there's all this barking and barking, but not too much biting from the FTC. It's rather disappointing that they're getting all this really good input from both of the SSRC and TINA.org, and I just haven't seen much come of it. So, you know, maybe that will change in the future. You know, hope springs eternal, right? So. But that's where we are today. That's the state of affairs that we're living in right now. I guess that's about all I have to say about that, so go right ahead.
And TINA stands for truthandadvertising.org, but they use the abbreviation TINA.org, and they do some pretty good work, I mean, as far as deceptive advertising and a whole bunch of stuff like that. And they pick on the bad players in the MLM world as well. But it's when there's a little bit of overreach that I think is, you know, or too many broad strokes, I think, which is the wrong way to do things, but that's another whole story. Okay, so there's one thing that I want to kind of mention that's a little bit off topic, but maybe not. We've spoken about this before, and this has something to do with TINA.org too. So it's about Mike Lindell. So if you've heard the name Mike Lindell, you know him for the MyPillow product, and also some of the things that's been going on with the elections, but we joked a little bit about the MyPillow guy for years, Scott. So we've been doing this radio show for a long time. We joked about the MyPillow guy because when he was selling MyPillow, TINA.org kind of nailed him for having something. It was like rated number one from the NSF, the National Sleep Foundation. And, you know, when I first read about, you know, who the hell? There's, like, I guess there's a foundation for everything. But I didn't know there was a National Sleep Foundation. Well, what it was basically Mike Lindell formed his own organization called the National Sleep Foundation and was fined $1 million for kind of like deceptive advertising, you know. He formed the organization that voted himself number one. So we joked about him a little bit because he's kind of awkwardly goofy, and his MyPillow commercials are all over the place, and he was kind of like a awkward, kind of a inventor, kind of a marketer, kind of a promoter, and he kind of fit in that world. Like Vince, if you remember Vince with ShamWow, you know, and Billy Mays, who's no longer with us, hit his head in an airplane, no longer with us anymore, if you remember the Billy Mays infomercials. Well, anyway, when Donald Trump became president, Donald Trump asked for manufacturers to come back to the United States, and one of the things that Mike Lindell was very proud of and very good at was he basically built the MyPillow manufacturing in his home state of Minnesota with a lot of his home people in Minnesota. And he also, because he was an addict, catered a lot to helping people straighten out their lives and giving them chances that nobody else would. So I kind of started to swing over to become a Mike Lindell fan because I started to learn a little bit more about what he did. And Now I'm kind of like an evangelist kind of fan as well, because when he was deplatformed for basically questioning the elections and doing the things that no one else on the planet, zero other people, if you said, who else is doing what Mike Lindell is doing? The answer is zero other people. He put his company, his reputation, maybe even his freedom at stake to prove that the elections are fraudulent. Not all of them are like 100%. You know, bad, but he wanted to make sure the pointed out the fraud and has done so in an undeniable way, and anybody that says no one's ever proved it is basically they're ignorant or lying. So anyway, so having said that, I've kind of followed this guy because I like to get my, you know, get boots on the ground, kind of listen to a little bit of the things that he does and says. And I've kind of like been a big fan. He's got a TV show. He's got an internet television kind of a thing going on called frankspeech.tv, frankspeech.tv if you go there. And I follow him every once in a while. He shows up on Alex Jones. And Alex Jones is another one of those guys that's kind of like the conspiracy guy that gets it right a lot or a lot wrong. And Alex Jones has been persecuted by what he did with Sandy Hook, and that's another story. But recently, I had purchased Mike Lindell's book. I got right over here. So the title is What Are the Odds? ? And it's a kind of an interesting book. And for those people that know a little bit about my personal story, I don't read because I have glaucoma. It's very hard for me to read. I can listen. I can look at computer screens, but it's really hard for me to read a book because my eyes aren't very good. So anyway, so having said all, they weren't always that way, but this is the way it is now. So I bought the book to support him. I bought my pillow slippers or flip-flops or whatever he's got to support him. I got T-shirts. We got pillows. I didn't even know I was a MyPillow guy. But we had MyPillows in my house. I didn't even know about them. Anyway, so the reality is I've kind of like become an evangelist towards helping him. Well, he had an event going on, or still has an event going on. And if you write in lindellevent.com, so Lindell is L-I-N-D-E-L-L, so one Lindell, and then oneevent.com, so lindellevent.com, he said, hey, if you go sign up for the event, which is in August of this year, 2023, the 16th and the 17th, he's got an all-day long event where he's doing something to kind of safeguard the next elections. And he's a big thinker. Like, I love his thinking. Even though he's delusional, he pulls it off. So anyway, so he says, go sign up and I'll give you a free gift. So what was I expecting from a master promoter? Well, the free gift is probably going to be, what, $20 off your next $100 order, I was thinking. Or, you know, what's your free gift going to be? You know, $20 off the Giza sheets. He's got these sheets going on. He started this thing called My Store, where he's kind of doing a whole bunch of other things as well. And I'm really kind of intrigued with following his I love to follow entrepreneurs that have a mission. And regardless of what's happening, this guy is really going for it. Like, he doesn't have to. But he's going for it because he loves his country. So just like maybe anti-MLMers or anti-MLM because they really think they're doing God's work, Mike Lindell really does think he's doing the country's work by doing the stuff that he's doing relative to the elections and has pointed out all of the stuff that happened with Kerry Lake in Arizona and Donald Trump and lots of other people with elections as well. So anyway, so I said, okay, Mike, I'll support you. Besides that, I'll probably be glued to the computer screen while you're doing your events. I hate when you do that stuff because you kind of dominate my life because I want to see what you're working on. I guess I'm an addict, if you will, in that aspect. So I have a hard time tearing away from it. So I'll go do it. So what he did was when I signed up for the event, I got the free gift back, and it was his book as an audio book. So I'm like, oh, that was really nice, Mike. You know, I didn't think whether you had it as an audio book or not. And I knew that most of his story was probably going to be about him being an addict. And I know enough about addicts, so it probably wasn't going to be anything that I heard that was new. It might be interesting for me to learn a little bit of his story, but it wasn't one of my biggest priorities. So I did this yesterday. I hate to say it. It's addictive. I mean, he narrates his own book. He does it very well. And he does go through a lot of stuff. It's 9 hours long. And that's a long time to binge, like, book listening. So I've kind of broken it up a little bit. But the reality was is that I would highly recommend it. It's got so much meaning for so many different people. And you don't have to be an addict or know anybody who's an addict or have anything to do with addiction. His messages are good as far as life lessons, God's lessons, people lessons, business lessons in particular, you know, just really good. It's really good stuff. So I like it, and by the way, it's contagiously addictive. It's like binge watching, you know, one of your favorite television shows, if you've ever had anything like that happen to you before. So one of the things that I learned through my son's addiction was that as I was trying to figure all this stuff out, is that, you know what, I'm an addict too. So an addict, meaning addictive personality or addictive nature, I said, you know, how do you clean that up, Peter? What do you mean by you're an addict? Do you smoke? Nope. No smoking, no pot, no drugs, no nothing. Maybe I'm an addict to self-discipline, you know, have a pretty structured life, like my habits, if you will. First you make your habits, then your habits make you. So I'm kind of addicted to those habits. I'm addicted to working hard. I'm addicted to helping people. I'm an addict. I can't get away from it. If you told me I couldn't do it, like there's no such thing as me sitting down doing nothing. I'm always doing something. Like even if it's anything, really hard for me to just kind of relax unless it's time to sleep and kind of pass out and I'm friggin' tired. But the reality was is that I realized that. So and by the way, I think most people that are super duper successful at many things are addicted, if you will, towards that level of success. So that's that undying perseverance. It's all that sort of stuff. So I just found that that book was something I wanted to share because it's an opportunity for people to have a free ebook and maybe take a look at what's going on with the elections and learn a little bit more about what Mike Lindell has done. And I will definitely share with you if you're like some people, I guess, might not be turned on by it at all or have an open mind towards it at all. And I kind of get it because there's, you know, people that just aren't. But if you're the kind of person that thinks like I do, and maybe like many of you do, you might find it super duper helpful. It'll have an impact on your life, I know. And it probably will be something you want to share with some other people as well. And one of the things that I'll just mention, when I was telling a few people about it, I was like, okay, you got to go to lindellevent.com. Then you got to scroll down towards the bottom. You have to sign up for the newsletter, and then you'll get an email, and then you'll have the link, and you can download that link, and it'll be on your computer. Now, I'm kind of a tech-savvy guy, so after I was done with that, I'm like, oh, there's the link. I could just copy and paste that link to someone else. And I said to myself, I kind of even took a, I know this means nothing to most people, but I said, you know what? I could just copy the link. Like I could copy and paste it to Scott and say, Scott, here's the link to the audio. But I said, you know what? You know, that wasn't what Mike Lindell wanted. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because, you know, this is, I was 3 hours and 57 minutes into this, and I was going to send the link to someone, like one of my techie guys, and just say, here's a good link, you know, save him the shortcut. And because I know he could do it. I know he knows how to do it. But I said, well, wait a minute. You know, the fair exchange was Mike Lindell said, I'm giving this to you as a gift if you sign up for my event, because we're trying to put as many eyeballs as we possibly can on this. And Mike's passion is making sure that we have free and honest elections. And I said, I would have circumvented the whole thing, like if I would have just sent somebody the MP3 link. So I stopped. I just said, yeah, I wasn't really thinking about that. And I was just thinking about, because Mike was talking about a lot of things relative to a fair exchange and a whole bunch of other things. And by the way, when you think about an addict and all the things that he's done wrong, and, you know, now all of a sudden you're going to change the rules to fair exchange, you'd say, well, that's about as inconsistent as you can possibly get. But I just said, you know, this is just something I want to just kind of like share with some people because it can have a major impact on some people's lives. Here's the very, very, very interesting thing. I'm 7 hours into this thing. He's mentioned MLM once, but he mentions it negatively. It was around 1 hour and 24 minutes. He mentioned it in a derogatory way. I don't remember what it was, but I remember it was derogatory. He was something like, it was kind of like going to pitching an MLM deal or something like that. I'm like, oh, shit. Sorry, Mike. You're like, oh, crap. You had to throw that in there. You had to just take one stab at MLM in this. So it was kind of funny the way he said that. Probably not thinking, but the reality was is that it was funny that he threw in an MLM thing into that. But it's an interesting audio book, And I know that some people, if you have a shallow mind, you don't think very much. You're abstract, you know, no abstract mind, can't figure out how to connect the dots. You'll probably not find it meaningful. But if you're someone like me that has a kind of a complex brain, a little bit more of a deeper thinker, more philosophical, it might really make a big difference. So last time, go to lindellevent.com, Lindell, L-I-N-D-E-L-L, event.com. And then one of the things that I, and then sign up for the free gift, or sign up for the event, you get the free gift thing. Whether you go to the event or not doesn't really matter. And he knows that too. You'll be on his mailing list. He'll pummel you probably, if you will, for buying stuff with MyPillow. If you don't want to do stuff with that, just unsubscribe or put an email address that you don't really care about as much. But the reality was is that it was really very interesting, and it's interesting to see the entrepreneurial passion that he has towards the things that he did, and the really very interesting and horrendous tragic story that he's lived throughout his life through addictions. So, Scott, thanks for the ramble, but I wanted to mention it at least because August 16th and 17th is coming up pretty soon. So back to you.
Yeah, it's right around the corner, and that's really interesting. I know you sent me the not the link to the audio, but the link to the event, and I'll have to follow up on that and listen to his book too, because that sounds very interesting. But you're right. I mean, I've noticed, and it really applies to a lot of the pro MLMers and a lot of the anti MLMers. On both sides, they're very simple minded. They really can't really think. They take things literally, and they don't understand that there's nuances to different things. And just as one example, and this is something that Robert Fitzpatrick, who's the patron saint of anti MLM, he sees the word unlimited income, and he sees that as infinity. And you can't have infinity amount of money, and therefore MLM is a scam. Well, that's not really the intent of using the term unlimited income. You know, what it really means is, hey, if you want to make $200,000 a year, you can. If you want to make $400,000, you can. If you want to make $1 million a year, you can. It's not infinity. It's just unlimited. Unlike most jobs, you have limitations. Even the CEO has limitations, and so it's just a term to describe the size of the opportunity. The more work you put into it, the more you get back, as long as it's not a scam, of course. And you already heard my story that I think most of them are either illegal pyramids or tool scams or both. And so, but those are some of the things that I've noticed looking at all the anti-MLM huns, is they focus in on one word, don't give it any nuance at all, don't give it any context within, you know, what's being said, and they just take the most literal negative connotation they can, you know, figure out, and then make a big deal about it, and it's just kind of stupid, you know, to do those things, because you're not really analyzing, you're not really finding the real issues. You're just going off on something and waving your hands and snarling and screaming and, you know, all the different things they do on these anti-MLM videos to gain attention. It's not to fix anything. It's to gain attention. And it really could be a lot more productive than it is, but that's people. So, I guess that's my two cents on that, Peter.
Yep.
But I'll look
thing.
Into that.
Yeah, one last thing about that whole thing. Yeah, it's a great book. So, again, lindellevent.com. The one thing that I'll mention, and I know this can be easily taken out of context, but I'm going to say it anyway. When you listen to this, and if you've never been around addicts before, if you've ever been around addicts before, you know this is already true. So I'm not just talking about drug addicts or alcoholic addicts. I'm talking about addicts, people who have addicted personalities, people that are addicted to success, people that are addicted to work, people that are addicted to exercise, people that are addictive personalities. They are some of the best at whatever they do, including MLM. So if you were to say to me, okay, you know, can we have a non-political, like, you know, whatever, don't take this out of context conversation, you know, what would you want as far as an MLMer or in direct sales, what would you want as far as one of you guys being a branch manager? I'd say I need him to be an addict. I really do. I need him to be so addicted. Like, I want an addict, but I don't want a drug addict because that brings us problems. I need an addictive personality. I need somebody who's going to throw themselves totally into it, blinders off. You know, I want them totally into, like, no holes barred, completely delusional as far as some of the opportunities that are available. Do these things that can't be done, whatever it takes kind of a person. You know, just like, you know, make it happen kind of a guy. Like I said, do the unrealistic. That's what I want. So I know everybody can take that out of context, but those are the people that you want to be your leaders, and they're out there. And unfortunately, some of them are drug addicts and alcoholics and gamblers and a few other things like that. But, you know, if you're looking for somebody who's top-notch, having an addictive personality when that addiction is generally steered in your direction is a good thing. So I know everybody can take that out of context if they wanted to. But the reality is that you can learn a lot by listening to the audiobook. And then you'll see what I mean by that. If you had a Mike Lindell, he was focused on MyPillow forever. And listening to the story is very, very, very interesting. And what he's doing right now, same thing, addictive personality. You wouldn't be surprised. So having that, Scott, I just wanted to tack that on as we go relative, bringing that back into the MLM world. So back to you.
Yeah, I mean, other words you can use is things like dedicated, driven. You know, those are also words that describe the addictive behavior. And you're right. You know, people that accomplish the greatest things, you know, whether it would be someone like Albert Einstein, who was addicted, let's say, to, figuring out the theory of relativity, or if it was some sports star who was, you know, addicted to being in top physical condition. All of those take a lot of dedication to be able to perform. And then you watch them on TV or, you know, wherever their work results, and you go, wow, that's really impressive. But most people don't understand what went into that, right? There was a lot of dedication, a lot of things that they had to push aside in their life in order to achieve what they achieved. It's not just your nonchalant person that pokes around at something that's generally going to achieve something great. It's the person that is dedicated and really puts, you know, either all or most of their effort in that one direction. A lot of the anti-MLM Huns interpret that as a cult. You know, so it's all these terms that get mixed together, and they just don't understand, you know, and they don't understand that a cult isn't even illegal, right? A cult is something that's been protected by the First Amendment since the Constitution was written. And so it's a way to describe behavior, but it's not a way to shut down MLMs. It just isn't going to go anywhere. And it really misdescribes what's wrong. Because again, if you're at the top of an MLM, it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of drive, you know, a lot of fortitude, a lot of not giving up and just trying over and over again. And most people are not willing to do that. And that's why in many cases, people just don't put either any effort or they put very little effort into an MLM before they quit. And then you see people saying, well, there's a, 99.7% failure rate. Well, yeah, but a pretty large percentage of those people never really applied themselves because they weren't addicted, as you say. They just dipped their toe in it and said, not for me. And they count as a quote-unquote failure statistic. And that's certainly not a failure in my book. That just means you changed your mind. You know, you got scared, you got lazy, whatever it was, you backed out. And it's just unfortunate that a lot of people focus on the wrong things versus the things that we mentioned at the beginning of this show and pretty much every show that we do. So I won't cover that again. Any more on that? I'll move on. If not.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah, so, I guess the Ed, you can focus on whatever you want. I just want to bring up Tupperware real quick, and then whatever else you want to talk about.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So on this radio show a couple of months ago, we talked about how Tupperware was almost out of business. I think it was around April of this year, 2023, for those people that might be listening to a recording. So Tupperware is a direct sales company, was huge for a long period of time, one of the leaders obviously involved in the storage containers kind of a stuff, you know, for food, and has really been struggling trying to figure stuff out, and we're almost out of business. I think BlackRock might have taken a look at maybe buying them out, you know, pennies on the dollar, but basically Tupperware is almost dead. And I did a radio show with a gal named Janine Avila, who was one of the leading Tupperware distributors many years ago, and she basically built a huge amount of money, and basically, as she put herself as a single mom with seven kids, you know, into her financial level of success. And the reality was, is Tupperware was just not able to make the adjustments. They tried to put the products in some retail stores, didn't work out. They tried a few other things. It was almost gone. And then all of a sudden, just recently, a lot of people were basically buying a lot of the stock. They're publicly traded, so the stock brokers or the stock buyers, you know, they're betting that it's going to go down to zero. So they're shorting the stock, shorting the stock, shorting the stock, shorting the stock, just like Bill Ackman did with Herbalife. And just like with GameStop and AMC, which I think is a movie theater company, the meme, they call it the meme stock guys, jumped on top of Tupperware and basically started to buy up the stock, raising the stock prices, where I think it's almost like 165% of where it was, or three times the amount. But it looks like somebody's breathing life into a dead company called Tupperware, and it's these meme stock guys. And I just figured I'd mention that because we mentioned Tupperware was almost gone in April. They should have been gone, probably delisted, probably sold for scrap, pennies on the dollar, nobody even noticed. But these meme stock guys are trying to pump up the stock to be able to make some money. This doesn't necessarily end well, but that's what basically they're doing. And I figured we'd just mention that because Tupperware is back on the radar on the stock market at least. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, very much like what Carl Icahn did to Bill Ackman with the Herbalife saga. Carl Icahn hated Bill Ackman. I won't go into the details on this show. We've done it before. But he just hated his guts. And so when Bill Ackman shorted Herbalife and announced they shorted it, Bill Ackman bought it up and he propped up the stock. Now lately, Herbalife's been hurting really bad. I think they're down more than 50% just in the last year or two. And they've been on a downward trend for two or three years. So they're not doing well either in the stock market. Their volume is going down. I mean, they're definitely going in the opposite direction where they would like to go. And certainly, this story about Tupperware is very much like GameStop, and it's very speculative. Like you said, it may not end well. But if you had bought some Tupperware stock, let's say a week or two ago, and then it cranked up to three times its value and you cashed out, you could have made some money. So it is possible, and it may even go up more, or it might crash down again. You know, that's why it's speculative. Is there's no really a strong underpinning of the stock price going up. Now, it could possibly result in more operating capital to where, you know, Tupperware can turn things around. You know, we don't know. That's what makes it speculative, is we don't know which direction it's going to go next. So it is an interesting story, and it's an interesting story, I think, to keep following to see where it goes. Because I think GameStop is still around, but I don't think they're not rocking and rolling. They're just, I think, surviving at this point, is my understanding. I really haven't looked at it in a while, but I hadn't seen any announcements they were out of business or that they were going gangbusters. So I think they're, you know, pretty much holding steady, not doing great, but not gone. So we'll see. Yeah, that's an interesting story about Tupperware for sure. Anything more on that one?
Nope. Go ahead. Over to you. I've been talking too much on this radio show.
No, it's great. It's great. Good stories and so forth. So we often use BehindMLM.com. It's a great website I found where they not only find stories, but they also follow up on them, and they track them over time. They don't just put some out there and then you don't know where it went. And they also have a nice search feature. So if you want to put in a company name or a person's name, it'll show you every story that has that particular word in it or words, so that, you know, if you want to track somebody, for instance, that's been in multiple MLMs, put their name in there and you'll see all the different MLMs they've been in. Now, they may have been in more that these guys didn't find. That's possible. But they do a really good job of finding stuff. And a lot of it is the past 2 or 3 years, probably at least, has been, you know, crypto type MLMs that are here and gone. You know, they're just fly-by-night, NTFs, all that stuff. And we don't cover those stories here because, again, most of them are very short-lived. And certainly, you know, if the FTC can't go after a company like Amway that's been around for almost two-thirds of a century, then can you imagine how inept they are at discovering a new crypto? It's a total scam, and taking action on it, it's just not going to happen. So these guys, you know, pretty much know they're going to get away with it. And so, you know, Behind MLM brings attention to them, and maybe it is helping some people not get involved. You know, it's probably doing some good as far as that goes. But again, we ignore most of those stories. There's just so many of them. They're so similar. They're so short-lived. It just isn't, you know, worth our time. But it's a great resource if you maybe have been approached by one of these crypto MLMs or whatever, to go to BehindMLM.com and see, you know, if they've looked into it, and you can find information. So it's a good resource. The story I'm going to start with is dated July 28th, 2023. And I thought we were kind of past this company and these people, but there was a late entry, I guess you could call it. The headline is Redwood Concealer Jacques Pujad, I don't know if how you pronounce his name, pleads guilty to fraud. So this guy was in bed with, if you remember, there's been a number of different related companies in all of this. There's Redwood Scientific Technologies. There's Renga Life. I think there was at least one or two other related companies to all of these. And we covered a story pretty repeatedly because it was this couple that was being sued by the FTC, a guy by the name of Jason Cardiff. And it just seemed ridiculous that he kept being non-cooperative with the FTC, and the judge kept giving him second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh chances. It was unbelievable to me that, you know, the judge did not hold him in contempt, this Jason Cardiff guy. And then eventually what happened was that lawsuit that you mentioned earlier, where the Supreme Court said, hey, FTC, literally for the past 4 decades, 40 years, you've been operating unconstitutionally by shutting down MLMs without allowing them due process by the Fifth Amendment, 9-0. So this was not a controversial ruling. But eventually, Jason and his wife wiggled out of this whole thing because he said, hey, you know, the FTC overreached on our company, and therefore, you need to just cancel this lawsuit. And the judge did, basically. Unbelievable how that transpired. But this other guy that we were just talking about, this Jacques Pujad, however he pronounces his name, he pled guilty, okay? And it was, I think it was like $5.2 million. Then he did some other stuff for almost $1 million. And you know, they must have had some pretty good evidence on him. And he was in cahoots with Jason Cardiff and his wife. So, you know, they were business partners at some level. And apparently, you know, the government had a lot more on this guy. And when I say government, this is the Department of Justice, right? So this is not your SEC and FTC fines, or don't ever do MLM again. This is, you're going to prison. And that's probably where this guy is going. I think it's 20 years maximum, and he's 63 now. So, you know, even 10 years, if he survives that much time in prison, he's going to be a very old man, because prison is hard. It's hard on your lifespan. They don't feed you very well. They don't give you much rest. There's a lot of threats in there, you know, physical, mental, all kinds of different threats in prison. So it's not a place you want to, you know, dream about as a dream vacation. And then that's where this guy's going. I think it's October is the, October 30th, it says, is the sentencing date. Now, chances are very high that it's going to be delayed, because that's normally what happens with these cases. But I have confidence that Behind MLM is going to keep up with it, whether it gets delayed a month or two or three, and we'll see. So while I'm thinking about it, a former guest on this show, Frank Parlato, is scheduled to be sentenced Monday, July 31st, after a very long lawsuit. He was supposed to be sentenced back a couple weeks ago, but the judge said, you know, I need more time to look at all these letters, pro and con, that have been written before I pronounce my sentence. The DOJ has asked for 2 years, and he was basically convicted of tax evasion, and there was several charges related to that. He pled out guilty. A guilty plea on one minor charge, but the DOJ was able to bring all these other charges back into the sentencing hearing to say, hey, it wasn't just this one little thing, judge, it was a lot more. So the judge has to use his judgment like judges do, and we'll see what happens with Frank Parlato. We should find out Monday. I mean, this is a very long series of delays of, you know, evidence, the trial, all the different arguments back and forth, legal arguments. And finally, it looks like Monday is the day. So we'll see what happens. But I'll hand it back to you, Peter, whether you want to comment on Frank or this Jacques Pujade guy.
Oh, we'll do Frank first. Frank, for those people that are listening in, if it wasn't for Frank Parlato, most of us would never know about Nexium and Keith Raniere and the sex slave thing and all of that sort of stuff, and maybe even Keith Raniere wouldn't be in jail today. So Frank Parlato was the guy who really he was addicted, if you'll use back to that word addicted, but dedicated to really revealing that story. Probably so much so that he might have put himself in the position he's in somewhere else, kind of like whack-a-mole. Like you stick your head out so much that now all of a sudden you get to prop some attention in your general direction that you didn't want, and I think that might have happened with him. So I forget what is his website, the Frank Report or frankreport.com, if you want to
Frank Report,
up on that.
frankreport.com, yep, frankreport.com, exactly.
So he's got a lot of really great information. So that's what I'll say about Frank. And he was on our live show. He was here live on our radio show. The other one that I'll reference is the other gentleman. Is if you recall the Regal Life people, they were really playing around with the judge for a really long time. And one of the things that they also did is, you know, is back and forth and back and forth as far as like, shut it down, don't shut it down, give up your resources, don't give up your resources, all that sort of stuff. When COVID happened, they kind of switched to basically saying, we're solvent because we're doing PPE equipment, so the personal equipment for COVID, whether it's masks or gloves or whatever else it might have been. But they basically were like a cat with nine lives for a real long period of time, and I think it was fine. I don't know where it ended, but the collateral damage is this guy that you're referencing, but they were on the Behind MLM radar for quite a long time. Now, by the way, you know, when we mention these things, one of the things that is not here, and which is very unfair, is the people who we're talking about. unfortunately, because of our legal system, they won't talk about their situation almost all of the time because they fear the system that they might be talking about. So I'll use as an example, one example, but I won't be specific. Having a conversation who is on home release from jail. So he was charged, convicted, the whole thing at a trial, went to jail, went through home confinement, and now is home and has a wealth of information to be able to share about a lot of things. His trial, you know, his version of what went on in his trial, the legal system, the prison system. But he will not, through whether he wants to or not, he shouldn't talk about these things because any one thing that he might say might be someone's interpretation of a violation, and he'll go back to jail for the rest of his prison term. So the legal system is all screwed up because it really makes sure that only one side gets a chance to tell the story. And sometimes that's not good because the other side of the story would probably bring a lot of light to the equation. So whether it's Ross Ulbricht from the Silk Road or, you know, some other people from famous stories, like including even the SBH people, they won't talk about their thing because they're afraid of the ramifications, the leverage, if you will, the blackmail, let's call it, that the legal system has on them if they speak out. So I just wanted to mention that. I don't know anything about this, the guy Jason who ran Regal Life. I don't know anything about his laboratory, his integrity, his family, how he ran his business. The only thing that we know, Scott, is what we read. And what we read is one-sided. So I'm not naive enough to realize that what we read and the one-sided version is the only side of the story. But that is the side that we're telling because that's the only side we're given. And that's unfortunate. So I'll let you comment on what I just mentioned.
Yeah, and most lawyers will tell their clients, even before trial, just clam up because anything you say is probably more likely to hurt you than help you. And so just be quiet. Let's go through the trial process. We'll present our side of the story at trial. But like you say, even after trial, the government can still, especially like you say, if there was a decision and then you say something where the government can, whether it's legitimate or not, accuse you of something, then you may have broken the agreement that was made and they could just put you right back in jail, you know, without even any kind of a new trial. So it really is one-sided. It really is. And I would never believe the government side in its totality because, you know, they're in business to convict people. Let's just face it. And they're not going to help out the defendant. They're going to tell the worst story they can come up with. And then the defendant has to defend themselves. We normally do hear the one-sided story, and we don't know the other side of the story, and sometimes we never will because of what you were talking about. But that's our process. It's probably the best in the world. It just sucks. So anyway,
yep.
It's one of those things. Go ahead.
I don't know which one you want to bring up next, but throw Eric Worre under the bus in some of them.
Yeah, I'll try to cover this next one real fast so we can get to Eric Worre. The next one here is also July 28th, 2023, and the headline is Cannaway sells distributor and customer info to Transact Card. And I think we mentioned this briefly last week, this Transact Card. And Cannaway is a marijuana MLM, so it's kind of an interesting, you know, combination of stories that kind of melded together in this particular story on Behind MLM. And so apparently there's some kind of a union between these two companies, and it's unclear exactly what it means to the distributors of Cannaway, but there you go. I don't know if you had anything more.
Yeah, I do. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, so Transact is basically a debit card company that is like a cash rewards kind of a thing. So, like, you use your Transact card, you get points back, and they call it Z-Bucks, where you can go shopping for Z-Bucks. So it's nothing new under the sun, although it's a rerun of stuff that may have been tried before, and it's got a lot of attention. And recently, now I know a lot of this stuff because when we do the regular stuff that I do on a regular basis, I'm on everybody's list. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, almost everybody's list. So I'm part of, like, if somebody's got something going on, they're sending me information about it. Or if I'm testing a website and I'm putting in my email on a capture page, I'm getting all the emails. So there's another company called iHub Global, which was selling the Helium token. And I know I'm a little bit off track here, but the iHub Global company was selling a device that was basically going to sell data. And if enough people had this device and they could sell enough of this data, then people would be able to mine also a separate token. And I know I'm a little bit on tangents over here, but the reality is they were using the Helium token, and it was supposed to get off the ground, never really did, had a little bit of a blip where the Helium token went, I think, as high as $50. But that was just a really temporary blip, probably based on a little bit of market manipulation or a lot of market manipulation, and now it's hovering down way below that. But the reality is that iHub Global was kind of like, you know, a rocket ship to the moon that just kind of never got off the ground, barely even made the platform for launch. And recently, iHub Global had a lot of their distributors take on ERC, which is the tax credit platform that a lot of companies are pushing. And there was another thing that iHub Global kind of reinvented themselves with. And then just recently, they did Transact Card. So Transact Card seems to be the go-to place if your business is going out of business and you're trying to save your downline and there's a way for you to be able to stay up on top. Let's swing your whole downline over to Transact Card. So at least you won't lose your downline, and we'll do this. So what happened was, relative to the article that you just read, Scott, this company called Cannaway, which if you were reading Ted Knighton's businessforhome.org, you would think that they were doing like gangbusters. I mean, Cannaway guys listed all over the place, product of the year, expanding over here. These guys are so wonderful. I guess Cannaway might be having some of their own challenges or struggles and wound up trying to pre-enroll the whole company with existing downlines into this Transact Card business without them knowing. Like, the masses didn't know. The leaders, of course, did, because they're the ones on the top of the pyramid, let's say. And the reality is at the top of the heap. And that just happened, I think, Scott, it was like July 20th or 24th, or I think just recently, and got some people probably a little bit worried about what's going on. So whether Transact's just like, oh, well, come here, you know, we'll take care of you, at least some of you, at least when you're doing your transaction cards, or Cannaway's disintegrating, but I can share with you, I'm sure there's some very interesting fly-on-the-wall conversations among Cannaway leaders of why the hell are we doing this and where's the distraction coming from and who the hell is Richard Smith, the Transact Card inventor, because he's got a very interesting past, so he's got a very interesting past as far as doing stuff that just doesn't pan out. So true, I got to give you some disclaimers. We have some of our customers that are super duper excited about what's going on with Transact Card. I'm not going to mention who they are because we have anti-MLMers that listen in, and they, you know, are just idiots, and they'll pick on or troll. So I won't say anything about anything. I've already said too much. But the reality is that there's a lot of excitement about what's going on in certain niche markets with the Transact Card, and it's a question mark as whether they're going to be able to pull it off or not. Now, what may make Transact Card different and not a pyramid or Ponzi scheme is they can legitimately have retail customers because there's a lot of people that use cash reward cards. If you heard during this radio show, my son came in to go to the grocery store, so I gave him my credit cards, and I said, use this one first, because I get 2% cash back on this one on some items based on the store that he's going to. And if it doesn't work, then just use the other one. Sometimes it's a PayPal card. I get a cash back, and sometimes when they swipe it, it just doesn't work. So I always give them two separate cards when they go shopping. So I'm big into, hey, listen, you know, with everything, I'm going to take as much cash back as I possibly can. So if there's somebody that waves a cash back offer in front of me, I might take a look at that. So they might potentially have a lot of retail customers. Now, they'll probably have a lot of MLMers jumping on board to be distributors, and they might have a ton of distributors as they're, I think they're still in pre-launch, this Transact thing. So you're always going to have more salesmen than you will have customers when you're opening. But as soon as this thing opens, especially with some of the niche markets that I'm talking about, there's a real possibility of them having lots of people that are using that product and buying it. I think it's like $25 to buy as far as like to become a customer and then get one of these cards. There may be potentially lots of people that are just customers and not distributors and may really get the ratio straight for customers versus distributors for those people that are wondering if this is a pyramid scheme or not. So I just wanted to throw that out there, Scott, because it's something that's on my radar because I'm looking to say, well, I mean, you know, when I say, like the red flag, what the hell did they just do with iHub Global? Red flag. What the hell are they doing with Canaway? Red flag. What's Canaway doing? What's iHub Global doing? Well, what the hell's going on here? Maybe we should be a fly on the wall or get some of their people on to tell us, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, this looks like a distraction, or where's the synergy here, or what's going on? And then from the Canaway, I'm sorry, from the Transact card people, I mean, are you a solid deal? Or, based on the owner's past history, is this just one more friggin' stupid thing that you're not going to be able to pull off? So I don't know, Scott, this one's got a couple of question marks all over it. So I'll let you comment on that, and back to you.
Yeah, time will tell. And you did mention something that's important here, and that's the customer and distributor ratio. And there is no law that says what that ratio needs to be. However, when the FTC has settled with Vima and Herbalife somewhat recently, 2016, it's getting further and further behind. But when they did the settlements, both sides agreed, you know, so this is a negotiated type of a settlement agreement. Both were satisfied with the ratio, so to speak. And for Vima, it was 51% of the products need to be purchased by customers, people who are not distributors. And for and they're back, by the way. They're under a different name. I think it's BODE, and they're still an MLM. Some people have said they're no longer an MLM, but they are. Herbalife is a little bit more complicated. It had a sliding scale from like one-third to two-thirds, but, you know, the middle of that is one-half, which means it's basically the same thing. So there is some argument that could be made. It's rather arbitrary, but, you know, it was a negotiated endpoint to where if you have at least half of your products and or services going to customers compared to the distributors, then the FTC will probably consider you a legitimate MLM. Now, you might be doing other things wrong, right? Because we talk about retail sales and tool scams. That doesn't mean that there's nothing else that could go wrong. That just means those are the two largest, from my perspective, problems that MLM has. So that's a little backdrop. There's no law. Now, I've asked the FTC in my input last year and earlier this year that they really should have a minimum. They should be defined for the industry. They shouldn't just say, hey, it's too complicated. We do a case-by-case complex analysis and all this, you know, business. So anyway, I'll stop there so we can get to the Eric Worre story because it's a good one.
Go ahead.
So this is dated July 26, 2023. The headline is Eric Worre sweeps millions in Ponzi fraud under the rug. So Eric Worre is one of these MLM, quote-unquote, generic trainers. He's been around for years. I think he's one of the most corrupt, lying guys in the world. I mean, he can, with a straight face, you know, say anything and not flinch. He's just that kind of a person. Behind MLM really laid into him in this story. And I'm going to give them props because they don't often do this. When they refer to a lawsuit, they don't put the link to the lawsuit. They just come up with what they want to talk about, and then you can go and dig into it if you want to and see that maybe they told the important stuff, maybe they left some important stuff out, but it's up to you to figure it out. They did put the link to Eric Worre's YouTube video that he did explaining why, hey, guys, everything's good as far as I'm concerned. You know, no worries here. And that's just how he is. He has no conscience. He has no concept, or he doesn't project it of right and wrong. You know, everything is relative. Everything is okay. I've never really, you know, this is Eric Worre talking. I've never really done anything wrong. Everything's cool. You know, all these different scams that I've, you know, worked with over the years that have been shut down, it's really their fault. It really had nothing to do with me. So I don't know how he sleeps at night, but, you know, he's just the worst as far as I'm concerned. As you know, it's hard to rank all of the generic trainers as the worst, but I would put him way towards the top of the list. And actually the FTC had a question in their requests. I think it was earlier this year, or maybe it was the one last year, where they said, what do you think about these generic trainers? You know, do you have any ideas about it? And I definitely had some ideas about it. You know, in my basic statement was back to the FTC, which, by the way, you can find on my Facebook page that I gave earlier. You can find it's the top story on my Facebook page. And I basically said, these people need to talk about retail sales as much or more as recruiting, because all you hear from them is recruit, recruit, recruit. And it's giving a false impression to the industry, and it's irresponsible, and they need to talk about how to sell the products, not just how to recruit. Now, I don't think the FTC is going to do much with that, but that is what should be done, in my opinion. So I'll hand it back to you, Peter. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so Eric Worre has been Eric Worre for a real long time. He was part of the partnership with the gentleman who runs New York, Jeff Olson, when they were doing the satellite company, TPN, the People's Network. So Jeffrey, and he was even before then, he was with Quorum. And I knew people that worked with him before, and they called him an asshole way back then, and I don't think that's changed. He's just got more money in his pocket, asshole. So Eric Worre is just basically someone who doesn't know how to tell the truth and thinks he's smarter than everybody else in the room. The interesting thing about Eric Worre is he's very slippery, meaning if you're a regulator, it's hard to pin anything on Eric Worre because he didn't really, you know, stick to anything that you could really nail him for and really pull some money from this guy and kind of hurt him, damage him, if you will, until now. So he joined as a distributor. He even said it. He was a distributor of a company called Omega Pro, which we've never really covered because you look at it and you just say, this is a scam. So he basically was a distributor of Omega Pro. He became a sales trainer for Omega Pro. See, that's the great way to do it. Find a good scam where you could become their trainer, sell them the tools, recruit people into the downline. Oh, my gosh. It's like multiple streams of income from the same scam with the same scammers. I mean, it's like a dream come true for Eric Worre. And then eventually the scammers got scammed because they all joined Traders Domain. Traders Domain took a huge hit So they scam. This is the scammers scamming the scammers scamming the scammers scamming the scammers scamming the scammers. And Eric Worre was in there big time and basically brought some big people in, some of the big people that go to his GoPro, you know, networks. So lots of people who I won't mention, but some big people also got wrapped up in there. And since he got so many big people in there, he got paid well. And then he also had his wife in there, too. She's on the books, too. There's a paper trail. Thank God, Scott, there's a paper trail. It's almost like with Eric Worre, I'm trying to think of the right analogy. It's kind of like if you needed to take a picture, if he was a drug dealer, I'll use Eric Worre as a drug dealer. For this example, if Eric Worre was a drug dealer, imagine if he walked in front of like a big pole every time somebody handed him the drugs or every time he paid. Like he walked in front of the pole and you're like, damn, we know he's doing it. We see it every time. It's just every time he does it, he walks in front of that stupid friggin' pole. He doesn't even realize how lucky he is. He walks in front of this pole. Camera can't see what it was that he transferred, but we know it's drugs and we know it's money. I mean, this guy's as guilty as hell, but he's just slippery. He's just been able to do it, and he's not smart enough to figure that out, because obviously if he was smart enough to figure that out, he would have never joined Omega Pro. He would have never done whatever he did. He's greedy. He's not thinking straight. He could be an addict as far as that, you know, lying and deceiving kind of thing, sociopath kind. But finally, Eric Worre messed up. So he did his apology video, and his apology video had nothing to do with any of the stuff that he messed up on. He was talking to his critics. You know, if I'm so good, how in the world did I help so many people? If I'm so good, he did, basically did a bullshit apology video. But Eric Worre, guess what? Your number is tagged. If they wanted to go after the people from Traders Domain and claw back the people that made the most amount of money, your name and your wife's name, buddy, are on that list. Your name and your wife's name are on that list. And I can't wait until your name is in the highlights of Behind MLM and everywhere else. Because, Scott, I don't know about you, but I've been singing the Eric Worre is a scam artist for as long as I've known and seen Eric Worre. And he disguises it by regurgitating bullshit that he hears like most of the MLM gurus that are out there. So having said that, Scott, can't wait for the day that maybe they claw him back and maybe less people will actually be hurt by the bullshit that Eric Worre does. Now, by the way, I got to share with you like this. If you're like, but I don't see it that way. Like, I love Eric Worre. I love giving him my money and going to his GoPro events and doing all that other sort of stuff. I'm like, well, go for it. Go to Eric Worre's events. Go do whatever Eric Worre does. But just know that this guy hurts a lot of people along the way. And if you like to work with people like that, that's your choice. Hey, I'm kind of like, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, if you're a consenting adult and you want to go there and listen to Eric Worre spew out stuff that anybody can spew out and just be entertained by that, if that's what gets you turned on, more power to you. God bless America or wherever country you're from. Go for it. But this guy needs to be unclothed as a scam artist, sociopath, money-grubbing, absolute waste of time. And I think with Traders Domain and Omega Pro, the government may have the hooks that they need to get that done. So that might be a little bit harsh, Scott, maybe not spoken as softly as you might mention it, but there you go.
No, I think you're spot on. It would be great if they went after him hard, because there are other generic MLM trainers out there that do a lot of very similar things, and it would be nice to have an example. And I think he is the perfect example. And if there's, you know, ample evidence that the law enforcement can use to go after him, then I think it's great. So anyway,
let me just share one thing. Now, by the way, here's the way it works. So when the government shuts a company down, everybody was a scammer. Like, everybody was a scammer. So even if you, if you're listening in, did it the right way, doesn't matter. You made money with it. Everybody's labeled a scammer. So it doesn't matter. It's the same thing like with Zeke Rewards. It didn't matter whether you did the the meetings the right way. Didn't matter if you did your conference calls the right way. Didn't matter whether you showed people how to buy stuff for the auctions, use the penny auctions, all that sort of stuff. Sold the biz the right way. You know, recruited people the right way. Set everything right. Use your income disclosure. Did not matter. Once that government says this is a scam, everybody's a scam. Everybody's guilty. And if you're a net winner, you're going to get your money clawed back if they want to claw back. It's just a matter of how far they want to go. The FTC has an opportunity today to be able to go after the trader domains thing, go after some of those people, and really make a statement of really bad people that really do stupid stuff and teach the industry a lesson, because Eric Worre does have a lot of influence. Do I think it's going to happen? What's the possibility? I don't know, Scott. I'll give it 10% or less. I'll short this stock. I'm going to say 10% or less that they're going to actually do that. And I'm not sure why they wouldn't take advantage of it, but I'm not sure. So I got a 10% bet on that one, and probably even less than that. So anyway, so Scott, go ahead. I'll let you wrap it up. And, oh, by the way, tell people – in your wrap-up, why don't you tell people where your website is so they can find out more information about whatever you might have available.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Peter. Based on past history, it's less than 10%. So it's very unlikely to happen, but we can still hope for it, wish for it, pull for it, promote it. So that's all we can do. So like I said earlier, I have three websites. I have the link to this radio show, my YouTube, my email. Everything's on my Facebook page, all those links. If you go to facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson, ScottTexJohnson, and it's all one word. Look for the Texas flag. That's me. That's how you can find all the information, the documentation about all these things we've been talking about, you know, because anybody can talk the talk. You know, can you produce the documentation and the logic and all of that? Well, I can. It's all on those things I mentioned. So I guess we'll see you next Saturday, Peter.
That's it. We'll catch everybody next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.